Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Hockey at the Rock. And here we are in a mood similar to the one we found ourselves in after, the first two games of the previous round series, and also known as two episodes ago. And in this case, we experienced something as Devils fans that we haven't experienced in a very long time. And John, how did it feel to watch the first series win since 2012, especially since it also came against the New York Rangers?
It felt fantastic, Dan. It was wonderful. It was the highest of highs that a hockey fan could possibly feel outside of the championship. To defeat your hated rivals, to come back from two games down. And as we learned today, on this day, May the 6th, in the year of our Lord, 2023, Gerard Gallant got fired. Because apparently management lost their minds with him at the after game four, which was, of course, the last time he had an episode. So this all dovetails very nicely. The glory of defeating our hated rivals. It wasn't easy. I was nervous as hell for game seven. But I got to personally witness not just one, but two 4-0 victories to close out the series for the Devils. That's fantastic. And I want to talk about that before we talk about the reality, the agony, the pain the New Jersey Devils are currently in.
Well, yeah. So as you mentioned, they basically flipped the script at home from those first two games against the Rangers, where they lost 5-1 in each game, which we'll get to more on that later. But they did, again, flip the script entirely and played what is essentially two pretty perfect games, or at least they looked perfect. I mean, by no means did the Devils not give up any opportunities like what has happened to them over the last couple of days. But Akira Schmid certainly looked comfortable in the net and made it look easier than I'm sure it was. He completely shut down the Rangers in games 5 and 7, and the Devils just looked to be in a completely different level speed-wise than them.
Yeah, the big thing about our hated rivals in the first two games is that they played a very conservative, passive 1-2-2 forecheck. Now, Devil fans, the people who matter, should really know what that means because, well, the Devils won their first Stanley Cup by reintroducing the 1-2-2, aka the neutral zone trap, through Jacques Lemaire. Systemic hockey is how the Devils got to their first of three glories. Mm-hmm. Keep that in mind later on in the episode. Anyway, the big turning point in the series was obviously the overtime winner in game three. Game four, you started to see more of the Devils play, quote unquote, their way of hockey, just rushing down our hated rivals, and their defense did an excellent job keeping them to the outside. So game five was effectively more of the same. In all situations, you throw in all the power plays, all the extra man situations our hated rivals had, they generated a whopping 2.46 XG. They got nothing past Schmid. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Not. Okay, to be fair, there was a clearance off. Actually, no, that was in game four. My mistake. There were a couple close calls, but Schmid's glove was on point, and the Devils just kept rolling, rolling, rolling. It was actually, if it wasn't for Igor Shesterkin playing very well, because the Devils generated 5 expected goals. They scored 4 with an empty netter. They generated 22 high-danger chances, Dan, to our hated rivals. 10, you know, the Shesterkin pretty much denied the Devils a lot, and the Devils still cracked him for 3 goals.
He had a series for the ages overall.
Yeah, it's a testament to how you can have a goaltender play out of his mind, because usually rule of thumb, if your goaltender is hot, that's all you really need. You're at least in the game.
Yep.
But you see, Dan, there's a lot of quit in New York. They ain't no pride in New York. They pulled the rug on those pride jerseys, remember? And that was especially apparent especially when Dawson Mercer finished that feed for the shorty, sending myself and the rest of the Rock into rapturous applause. Mm-hmm. There was a lot more red in game five. And again, just like the team, a whole lot of quitting from the visiting fans. Shout out to Artemi Panarin for showing up as stale bread for that turnover that ultimately led to the 2-on-1 shorthanded goal. And also props to the not back-checking that he performed. It was glorious, Dan. It was wonderful. Which unfortunately made game six sting a little bit more.
Well, game six felt a lot like the first two games, especially game two, where it just, they manifested something towards the end of it after giving up a power play goal. And again, Chris Kreider,
But it was Chris Kreider's leg.
Yeah, his leg this time, not intentional redirection, but still, he was hovering around the net front, and that's not a place where you want to have Chris Kreider be, but it's not much you can do at a certain point. So that game felt, like I said, a lot like game number two specifically, where the Devils started well, and then it just really went downhill quickly, and Igor Shesterkin kept it mostly downhill.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this was a game where Shesterkin pretty much stole the game for him, for the Devils. I'm sorry, for his team, rather. Stole it from the Devils.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to see a lot of the elements of rushing him down, crashing the net, and Shesterkin just held up. And our hated rivals, they just found ways to beat Schmid. And it was a bit concerning, one, because, you know, when you're up 3-2 in the series, you don't want it to go to game seven. That's the one thing. You don't want to turn into one game where just one bad night, a bunch of bad mistakes, one bad penalty call could be the end of your season.
Because usually in that case with the game seven, you know, better goalie wins in a lot of situations, because you always get asked that question. Who would you take in a one game, you know, I need to start this one goalie situation to win a series? Shesterkin is the answer for a lot of people. And that's a scary thing to face down, knowing that that's what would be coming for you in a game seven. That's exactly what they had. And they stared it down, and Akira Schmid said, well, me too. And they essentially just recreated game five.
It was actually worse than that, Dan.
Oh,
it was actually worse than game five for our hated rivals.
Oh, they buried them harder than in game five. Yes, agreed.
Yeah. I mean, despite the fact that ultimately, you know, our hated rivals ended up with more shots and a couple more attempts, the XG doesn't lie here, Dan. XG in this game, say what you want about the expected goals model, Dan, it was 4.92 by the Devils to the New York's 1.95.
Yeah.
It's a do or die game seven situation, and you can't even generate enough offense to get to two expected goals. They had five high danger chances all game long, Dan.
They had what, two shots in the third period?
Well, that was the game five game.
In game five? And
in
they
game five,
did
they had two shots.
Similar to that?
Yeah, bear with me for a sec here as I quickly confirm. Because, yeah, our hated rivals had eight shooting attempts in the third period. Mm-hmm. Eight. That's eight. That's less than nine. That's greater than seven.
Wow.
They had 11 in all situations. So when the net got pulled, Shesterkin got pulled. Like, there was a point in game five where Shesterkin, you know, did a drive-by by his bench screaming, come on, do your jobs. And his teammates basically said, nah, you got this, bro. And, you know, Adam Fox had an awful game. Chris Kreider had an awful game. Andrej Palat sunned him for a shorty shortly after a 4-on-4 situation for the game's opening goal by Michael McLeod.
Classic playoff Palat moment, by the way.
And then John Marino turned into Bobby Orr for a shift. And
awesome.
Then, you know, drove in, didn't get the shot through Shesterkin, collects the rebound, flings a pass from behind the goal line to Tatar for the goal. Now it's 2-0. And then, you know, you're holding on, but you're still holding your breath because at 2-0, you know, one bad break and all of a sudden it's a game. And you could finally relax when Erik Haula, who surged throughout this series, he was the team's leading playoff scorer, Dan. Erik Haula.
Yep.
He was hot, legitimately hot. Set up by the big deal. He hits the back post of the center of the net so hard. I lost it, Dan. At that moment, I knew that was the dagger.
Oh, yeah.
At that point, it was over. The fans of our hated rivals, they started leaving in droves at that point. With a little over 5 minutes left, technically 3-0, it's not impossible, but it's pretty close to it. And nothing that New York did came even remotely close to getting back in the game. The entire arena stood for the remainder of the game. We loved it when Jesper Bratt scored the empty netter because it was his first goal after a lot of good work. I think he's gotten a lot of unfair criticism to a point. I understand he's a big scorer. You want him to score goals, but he's on a cold streak, just like Nico Hischier, just like Timo Meier. It sucks, dude, but you got your goals from McLeod. You got him from Tatar. You got him from Haula again. You got the 4-0 win. Schmid's glove was awesome. Steve Ellicott can go eat it. Ray Ferraro, I don't know if he's laughing anymore, Dan. I ain't laughing at him because he infamously laughed towards the end of game six after the fifth goal against. Credit to Schmid. He bounced back in a huge way and shut out our hated rivals. He is now second all-time in Devils playoff shutouts with two. It tells you, you know, how
I
much
love
the
Devils goalie stats. They're so good always.
Yeah, Brodeur's safely at number one with 24.
It's not ever going to come close for anyone at the rate that the Devils goalies have gotten, because it seems that they will just never find anyone that lasts more than a couple of weeks. Because while that was awesome, those two, those last three games, and maybe two of the three were more awesome than the other one, but still, overall, the arc of that series is great to follow. We all are thrilled about it. And again, as a reminder, the expectations did shift this season when the Devils started winning games, but there's no need to rush this timeline of this team. And that's something that I want to state preemptively before we talk about the results so far against the Hurricanes, who are considered a cup contender from the beginning of the season. Now, did the narrative shift when they got a bunch of offensive injuries? Yes. And when the Devils improved at the deadline? Surely. But that remains that the Devils were meant to be a playoff contender that may be won around this year. And here we are in that exact position. So before we say, let's, burn it all down from these first two games, I think we should have some perspective and say, incredible accomplishments so far, boys, especially winning that first round from a perspective of you need to know how to do it, and now they know how it's done moving forward.
And most importantly, it's against your hated rivals,
Yeah.
because what right or wrong, that's the one team you don't want to lose to. Say what you want about hockey, say what you want about professional sports. I think soccer may be the only sport that's more, this is more ingrained,
No,
where,
baseball. Baseball's pretty,
yeah,
it
okay,
depends on
but
the rivalry, I guess.
depends on the rivalry. But the point is that when you have a rivalry,
Yeah.
you absolutely positively do not want to lose in that rivalry. Because you, and as an organization, as a fan base, you're going to hear about it for a while. Case in point, the ESPN broadcast kept hammering the 1994 Eastern Conference Finals
Yeah,
throughout the
few
broadcast.
mentions of 2012, huh? And 2006, few mentions.
And unfortunately, we're going to keep hearing that because Mark Messier continues to get work as a broadcaster for some inexplicable reason. But that's the four letters job, not mine. But yeah, this is a crowning statement for this whole season. It's not just the biggest and comeback season to season improvement from NHL history. It's not just a franchise record of wins or a franchise record of points. It's not just a 13 game winning streak. It's not just Jack Hughes getting 99 points. It's also you beat our hated rivals in a 7-game series and got their coach fired and put them in a state of confusion. Like this is a crown. This is cherry on top of the sundae here, Dan. This
It's
is
a
An
big
extra,
win.
it's an extra banana in your banana split. It's extra whipped cream for your sundae. Whatever preferred topping, that's that. It's
And
wonderful.
so this leads to, feelings of deja vu, not just from the first two games of this series, but from the first, maybe not the first two games, but with the amount of goals the Devils are giving up, we're seeing a lot of statistics from that 2006 series against Carolina, where the Devils in the first game against them gave up. Or lost the game by more than 4 goals. And they've done so these first two games against the Hurricanes, who have looked incredibly potent. Again, from a deja vu perspective, when the Hurricanes won that Stanley Cup in 2006, the Devils are exactly who they played after the Devils beat the Rangers in round one. So
In a
is
sweep, no less.
history, yeah, is history on the way to repeating itself? Who's to say? But the Devils certainly have their work cut out for them because as bad as game one looked, again, game two looked worse. And this time it didn't look worse because of an early, spiraling discipline problem with
Oh
power
no.
plays giving up opportunities. In fact, the Devils' power plays look so much worse when you consider that they've been outscored by Carolina on their own power play 4-0 over the course of the season. And at every game state, the Devils have been brutalized. I can't overstate that. When they lost the Rangers in the first two games, at least the game flow started to even out by the end of game two. It is not close through two in this series.
No, I mean, this is a classic example of, and I don't want to turn this into an argument, Dan, but I have to go there. This the first two games between Carol, and I have a post about this coming up on Sunday. It's called Not All 0-2 Deficits Are the Same. Because the big thing about our hated rivals, and we talked about this at length on the show, and we talked about it a bit here, is that the big turnaround for the Devils against our hated rivals was that the first two games, the Devils wanted to go beat some people up. They wanted to bonk some heads. They wanted to show how tough and gritty they could be in this more libertine refed environment. And the refs were not buying it, and our hated rivals didn't give a damn about it. And Chris Kreider feasted on them for it. Once the Devils started playing the way they're meant to play, the way they beat the Rangers three times, the way they've won so many games this season, our hated rivals had no legitimate answer for it. And that's, I think, a big reason why Gallant got fired today. Contrast that with Carolina. Rod the Bod, beefy Brindamore, the swole smart man. I can't think of another S at the moment. The swole scholar there. The swole scholar of 5-on-5 hockey. Carolina is, I'm going to compare the current 2002-2023 Carolina Hurricanes to the 1995 New Jersey Devils.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you sit there and say, oh, well, you know, other teams have more talent and, oh, they're not at 100% and this and that. What makes Carolina such a dang good hockey team is because everybody on that roster knows their role and knows how to play the systems that they design. And Brendan Moore has decreed this for now a couple seasons. They play a very aggressive 1-2-2, so much so that it sometimes looks like a 2-1-2, meaning you have two forecheckers high up in the zone as opposed to one. And they play man-on-man defense. They don't collapse, Dan. They don't sit in it. They don't do what our hated rivals do and try to, like, flood a zone or do what the Devils do and, like, try to go strong side. Like, they just stick to their men. And everybody works hard, whether it's Sebastian Aho, Stefan Nason, Derek Stepan, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, Jalen Chatfield, Shane Gostisbehere, who is, I guess, the missing link for their defense. Everybody contributes to this. Everybody. And the Devils have had zero answer for this.
It's been scary. It's like a swarm of bees every time the Devils have the puck, and they have paid for it dearly. And again, in consecutive games now, the arc was pretty much the same. Carolina jumps out to really, really insurmountable early leads. It's just so tough for the Devils to respond to that because they can't even string together two passes to get out of their zone. I mean, the first period of game one, they had one shot on goal.
One.
So brutal. At least in game two, they were tied leaving the first period. But still, you know.
Not just one shot on net, Dan. It took 25 minutes to get the second shot on net. And they were down 3-0 when it happened. Granted, it was a goal by Nathan Bastian. But at that point, it's basically who cares?
It was just really bad. And the thing is, last series where you make the goaltending switch, you could say that the Devils did get goal lead to some extent in games one and two. They obviously were not great, but there was some goaling involved. So you make that switch and you see how that might help. And then you can easily pull Miles Wood to not get penalties, which made the majority of the difference. Here, you're getting bodied at 5-on-5. There's not a lot of changes you can make. Yeah. And so through the first two games, first of all, the one change that we're expecting to see, and I think it makes sense at this point, is Vanecek in for Schmid, because Vanecek, while game two was a nightmare for everybody, he did do well in relief in game one, and you have to switch something up. You have to switch up the team's mentality in some way. And the second shift that's happening is what you're talking about, to beat exactly that 1-2-2, or attempt to beat it in a way that aims to move the puck up quicker, aims to develop the play faster from the blue line and beyond. And the Devils are finally bringing in Luke Hughes. Now, again, temper your expectations. We saw how he looked in the last two games where he actually played during the season. But it's exciting.
Well, at this point, you know, given how badly the Devils got bodied, and I do mean that literally and figuratively bodied, because, I mean, you look at the 5-on-5 numbers, it's like game one, the Devils were out XG'd by, you know, barely 2-4. It was a lot better in 5-on-5 in game two, but again, same point. You know, the Carolina buried the Devils in goals, and, you know, whatever the Devils were doing is just consolation at that point. You know, Miles Wood, yay, I'm glad you snuck in behind, you know, everybody and fired a shot on net. Woo.
It's still not shut out.
still down 4-1, so who cares? The fact that the BMW line is getting praise is almost like damning with faint praise.
That's crazy to me.
because the thing is that the BMW line also got pinned back a ton, and if it wasn't for Ryan Graves and Kira Schmid, they would have been scored on a bunch of times. Nevertheless,
speaking of Graves, he took
a nasty hit into the end boards in game two from Jesper Fast. And Graves continued to play a little bit, but then you started noticing you see him less and less often, which usually is a sign that he was trying to play through something and it just wasn't working out. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, when you're losing big, it's like, don't put out the half injured player, you know, don't risk it further damage.
Well, it makes sense. And he also wasn't playing all that well.
He wasn't. No. And this is another point that I guess I get frustrated with is, you know, And the result of the first two games against our hated rivals, you know, the call was, we got to get gritty, got to get tough, even though that was a reason why they were not playing well against the Carolina team. You got to get gritty, got to get tough. No, you have to figure out a different tactic. You have to stop playing into Carolina's system so much. This is very much a Lindy Ruff, go figure this out situation as much as it is an effort situation. I agree. The battle
to level his has credit to be better. In round one, they did.
And they did in round one. They did that to our hated rivals, which is great. Now you have to do it against Rod Brind'Amour. And the thing is that, and, you know, unlike Gallant and unlike our hated rivals, Carolina, I have no reason to believe that they're going to give up on how they play, because they played like this against the Devils in the regular season. And yes, the Devils won a couple, you know, two of those games. They took another two a shootout. But I looked back at those games, Dan, and the Devils did this largely because Pyotr Kochetkov was awful in two of those three games he played against the Devils. Ronta had a bad game against the Devils. And if it wasn't for Mackenzie Blackwood being all Blackwood, you know, maybe the Devils would have won that one outright. And you also got to see mistakes, some uncharacteristic mistakes by the Canes. Whereas in games one and game two of this playoff series, no Carolina player has looked bad at all. Every single player has been good for the Carolina Hurricanes. Everyone up and down the lineup. So you have the worst case scenario. You have a system the Devils haven't been able to figure out. And Frederik Andersen, whom the Devils have not seen all season, is showing up to be just as hot as Schmid was against our hated rivals. And nobody on Carolina is playing all that badly. So who are you going to pick on? Who are you going to punish? The answer seems to be nobody. Throw in the fact that Carolina already has maybe the best defense to the entire NHL. They have one of the best penalty kills in the NHL, so that doesn't help a completely miserable looking power play. They came close in game two. Dougie Hamilton hit a post. They had a brief 5-on-3 with some shots. There was some hope. There was some life, but it wasn't enough. And unfortunately with Carolina, based on these first two games, you know, you can't just be okay. You have to be fantastic. You have to match excellence. And unless Lindy Ruff is going to create some wonderful adjustment that's going to force Carolina to ease up on the aggression or leverage that 1-2-2's aggressiveness against them somehow, I want to believe, Dan, but I'm not seeing it here.
No, it's tough to, like, again, where it was tough to envision but possible in round one, this one feels like a much higher mountain to climb. Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously hoping I'm wrong here. We're recording the night before game three. It's pivotal. If you go down 3-0, it might as well be over. But if you're down 2-1, again, even if you go down 3-1, we saw the Islanders kind of give them a scare too. And maybe the Islanders were more equipped stylistically to take them on as well. I don't know. It seems to have gone better for them so far.
No, I mean, I'm looking at this here, and the Islanders did a lot of the same thing. I'm sorry, the Hurricanes did a lot of the same thing to the Islanders in 5-on-5.
Well, the Islanders have a better goalie.
They have a better goal. That's pretty much how the Islanders did it. They basically have a better goaltender. And now, granted, the Islanders did punch back a little bit, I think a little bit better than I'm slightly giving them credit for. But some of those games, Carolina basically just pulled rank effectively and said, look, you're not going to beat this 1-2-2. You're not going to beat our forecheck. You're not going to beat our man-to-man defense nearly enough times against Antti Raanta or Frederik Andersen in game six, who was incredible in that game six, by the way.
Yep.
And Ilya Sorokin, you know, you're talented. I think Sorokin's better than Shesterkin, but not in this playoffs, you know. And, you know, you can crow at me about heaviness and the identity line and hard work and blue-collar work ethic. And, you know, the Islanders are golfing right now. You know, spare me the Rock'em Sock'em Don Cherry style of, you just got to play tougher and play more Canadian like them good old Tarana boys. Like that's just not going to fly against this Carolina team. This is very much like the 95 Devils. Don't be like the opponents who were so salty at the 95 Devils scheming their team to nothingness. Figure out a better scheme. That's what Scotty Bowman did when he talked with Vyacheslav Fedosov. And that's how he came up with the left wing lock. You know, that's ultimately what it's going to come down to. And we'll see if Jack Adams' final is Lindy Ruff, which was inappropriately announced before game two, before Rod Brind'Amour ate his lunch and dinner.
Before Curtis Lazar and Timo Meier were on the same line, you mean?
You know, at that point, I'm not even mad about that, Dan, because at that point of the game, it's like just whatever. Just throw stuff at a wall, see if it sticks.
Well,
But yeah,
it
but the point,
didn't.
it didn't stick at all. It was awful. That 4-on-4 situation at the end of the second period was like a dagger, but never mind that. The point is that, you got to be able to figure this out, because Carolina is not going to give up on it, and they have no reason to. They got 113 points with this way, Dan. They're, they're cruising right now in this playoffs against the Devils, and they out. Yeah, they got scared a little bit by the Islanders, but they put up a softy pass to Ilya Sorokin in game six in overtime. So they're playing still.
And
Clearly, it's working.
the regular season says they're the best team remaining, so
Yeah.
it is what it is. So you have to adapt, you have to adjust to them, and figure out how you can get something out of this series yet and give the home fans something to cheer for. And now that you mentioned Lindy Ruff's nomination for the Jack Adams Award, worth mentioning the other Devils who are nominated for major NHL awards. Now, we all know that Patrice Bergeron is getting the Selke this year, due to the
Yeah.
Bruins having just the season from whatever, heavenly place you can imagine, minus the whole playoffs part that actually matters. But Nico Hischier, it got his first of many, many, many upcoming Selke nominations. Just playing his game, it's exactly what you would expect from Nico Hischier, except the productivity has now arrived to boot. He spent most of the season healthy for once. And we saw the exact reason the Devils drafted him first overall, that Selke contending defensive forward, heartbeat, captain of the team, clear leader, respected in the room. And again, that's not why you get nominated for the Selke, but he seems to embody a lot of the traits that Bergeron has over the years. So congratulations to Nico Hischier for that nomination. And
Yeah.
to Jack Hughes for the Lady Byng Memorial Trophy. Basically, it's most skill and least penalties. That's how they do this award presentation. And Hughes was close to this category last year. I thought it could have been nominated even last year, but now that he's higher profile, now that he's got the points to match,
And he played the whole season.
the points efficiency, the durability for the whole season, now he is nominated for Lady Byng, and that's one he could conceivably win. I don't know if he will this year, but he could.
I think he should. I mean, let's be. I actually looked at this briefly. For the Selke finalists, it's Hischier, Bergeron, and Mitch Marner, which is a bit of a surprise that a winger got nominated. Based on this pure 5-on-5 and the penalty killing numbers, Bergeron is the most defensively effective out of the three by far. Like, no disrespect to Mr. Hischier, but
He's winning.
if this is a regular season award, that's something I want to emphasize first. This is a regular season award. It's also voted on by the writers, by the hockey media, the PHWA. So the Selke is very much a reputation award. So Bergeron has the reputation, and most importantly, he has the best resume of the three finalists. I would argue that a Carolina Hurricane should have been on this list, whether that's Sebastian Aho, whether that's Jordan Staal. I think Barkov maybe should have gotten some more love for this award as well. Maybe Yanni Gourde out of Seattle, but this is Bergeron's. So in the case of Hischier, it's an honor to be nominated. For the Lady Byng, I think the big deal should get it. Because your other finalists are Braden Point, who had a fight this season, Dan. A fight.
A
A
fight.
fighting major. Like, he only took one minor penalty, which is impressive, but you had a fight. How are you in this award? I guess maybe everybody forgot about this fight. Anja Kopitar is the other guy, and he's, I guess, maybe the favorite in the sense that, he's an older player. You could have argued Kopitar could have been the Selke, kind of gotten a Selke finalist spot. He did play a lot, and unlike Hughes and Point, he plays in all situations, including penalty killing time. He goes up against tough minutes, and he only took two minor penalties, which is really impressive. But Hughes outscored Kopitar by 25 points. He's outscored Braden Point, and Hughes was targeted a lot this season. He could have done a lot of retaliatory stuff. Didn't. And Jack Hughes is very much, he's starting to get a lot more notice as a star in this league. So I think Hughes may actually win the Lady Byng, and it would be well deserved. More so than, Mr. Pugilist Braden Point and Anja Kopitar's reputation.
I'm certainly here for it. But yeah, that's the Devils that were nominated for the major awards at the NHL Awards, or some major awards at the NHL Awards. So good for them. Great season for the Devils. Hopefully continues on. We do have to say goodbye to the season of the Utica Comets, unfortunately, though.
Yeah.
as they ran into a tough Toronto Marlies team. They're always tough for some reason.
Well, they finished, well, the Marlies, the organization, the Toronto organization clearly prioritizes and throws a lot of resources at their minor league teams, even the Newfoundland Growlers that knocked out Adirondack. It's well stocked full of talent at that level. So, the Devil, I'm sorry, the Comets, they try to equip themselves quite well, but they've just had too many leaky moments, and too many situations where they're just giving up bunches of goals that happened in their critical game three, because that series was a best of five. So you can't really lose. You can't do that. So in a 1-1 series, you really have to win. And unfortunately for the Utica fans, they got to witness losses to the Marlies. The Marlies did lead the division. So, I mean, it may be expected that they moved on, whereas the Comets had to do the play-in series with Laval. But credit to the Comets. Holtz got to play, got to produce. Nemec got to produce. Clark got to produce. Tobias Vilén came in from Pelicans because they actually lost in the championship series in the Liga to Tapara in five games. So he was freed up. He was technically on loan from Utica, so he was allowed to come back and play. So he got at least a taste of the AHL. Daniel Mistul, who got his ELC since it's the free agency period now in Russia. So he got his ELC. Gritsyuk rejected the contract from Omsk, but supposedly Ska St. Petersburg's interested in Gritsyuk, and that's a bad sign because Ska could pretty much out-negotiate anybody. But we'll see. But yeah, unfortunately, the Comets' season is over. They at least made the playoffs. They need to find some more offense out of their AHL veterans come in the coming year, because that's just how it is in the AHL. You just cycle out your veteran players over and over. And we'll see how Mistul gets on, how Vilén gets on defense next season, where Nemec will probably compete for an NHL job, and Luke Hughes, depending on how tomorrow goes in game three, he may never see Utica, Dan.
I mean, yeah, Graham Clark also potentially coming up next year. He had a great season. Good for him.
Yeah, he led the team in offense, and again,
And we
he
all want
produced in
Holtz
four.
to compete for a spot again.
That's kind of the thing about the Devils, is that yeah, they obviously burned a couple draft picks to get Meyer, and they don't have their third because of the Marino trade, but they have top talent pretty much on the cusp of making it in terms of Luke Hughes, Simon Nemec, Alexander Holtz. And
Yeah.
if you can find an NHL player out of Graham Clark or Nolan Foote, then all the better.
Yep.
So the Devils do have some, the pool's going to get a little thinner just because it is, and those players are the best players are now with the Devils, and you stockpile these prospects also to make big moves like the Timo Meier move, and you make the best of it. So credit to management for at least icing a Comets team that would be competitive and did play in the playoffs, and at least it played more than just a couple games. They beat Laval in the best of three. They were so close to winning that game one, but they really did blow that one to the Marlies. They did win game two. You would have If game three would have gone differently, I'd like to think the Comets, we're talking about the Comets moving on, or at the very least playing a winner go home game five in Toronto right now.
Well, either way, we'll look forward to seeing what they have for next year and seeing which Comets took the most from their playoff experience there and bring it to New Jersey as the Devils continue to make deep playoff runs, fingers crossed. But we'll look forward to the next set of games against the Hurricanes where the Devils can hopefully turn their fortunes around. After a happy birthday, Martin Brodeur and Jonas Siegenthaler, what was that, yesterday? Or maybe even 2 days. No, I think it was yesterday. Anything else to add for this episode, John?
Well, the biggest thing is I really want to emphasize that, as much as the romantics of the people who matter, the older school hockey fans and all that, got to get with the times. Carolina is showing you how a system can beat a team, and it's on the Devils to figure out what that system is. And I'd like to think if Carolina and does move on and they take on Florida, who's also up to nothing in their series, also pretty much scheming out Toronto, I think you're going to start to see a sea change, and you're going to see a lot more teams play that aggressive forecheck like Carolina does. And if the Devils and other teams don't learn how to deal with it, it's going to be a bit of a problem than more than just Carolina and maybe Florida games, Dan. So beware. You're not going to get You're not going to just see this for a couple more games and then be done with it. It might stick around a little longer, depending on how their playoff fortunes go.
Well, fair enough. It's been my nightmare so far, certainly. But hopefully it's going to end soon. So thank you all for listening, as always. Let's go, Devils, and let's turn the fortunes of this series around.